This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 359, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
The city keeps on going on.
Hey, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 359, the Hunkered Down edition. My name is Ron Richards, and I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick, who is safe in Los Angeles.
I'm hunkered down in California.
Yeah, and good, Josh Flanagan.
That's a good spot.
And Josh Flanagan.
Unless there's an earthquake.
But and Josh Flanagan.
I'm hunkered. Hunker.
Where are you hunkered?
I'm hunkered. I can't say.
You're in an undisclosed location.
I am now hunkered in I was gonna say sunny Long Island, but it's not so sunny right now. it is like as close to The Walking Dead as it gets out here.
It's the pretty fucking farthest thing from sunny, isn't it?
Anyway, we are from the website ifanboy.com.
Funny.
ifanboy.com, where we persevere and we can't let the storm win. We read our comics and we enjoy them, and then we go and write a review on the website of the book that we have deemed the pick of the week, and then come back here and talk about it, as well as the other books that came out each week. I want to warn you, we're going to talk about what happens in the book, so there might be a little spoiler action going on. So if you haven't read your books, I would press pause, come back and listen later, or just be warned and run that risk. This week, Connor had the pick, which is lucky because it was very easy for him to get his comics, unlike half the country.
Yes. No.
I still haven't been.
On a serious note, though, we are all three of us East Coast guys, and much of our audience is on the East Coast, and a lot of it's in New York. So hopefully you are all surviving and doing okay. Yep. and haven't lost anything that can't be replaced or that. I know my whole family is dealing with it, and Ron's family. And we may joke about it, but everyone here certainly has it on their mind.
Yeah, we joke about it just because that's what we do. Yeah. But seriously, like, if you haven't donated to the Red Cross, or if you can have anything you can do, if you're in the East Coast area, like, you know, like, everybody's helping out. You know, and I joke, say we can't let the storm win, but I've already seen, I've been back in New York for less than 24 hours, and I've already seen, you know, great examples of community.
I thought you were going to say, I've seen the storm as one.
No.
The storm wants.
I've already seen perseverance and all that sort of stuff. So, I mean,
Have you seen looting also?
Luckily, I have not seen looting.
Ron looting his parents' house.
That's normal.
You're like, what happened to all our yodels?
Yeah.
So we'll get into it. If you haven't gotten your books and you're on the East Coast and you're listening, then, you know, I apologize. So the pick of the week was
how it is.
Was Joe Kubert Presents number one. And we lost Joe Kubert earlier this year. But I feel like before that, we got a real strong Joe Kubert renaissance, at least in the popular mindset of the comic world. He was doing before Watchmen stuff, but he's also doing other books. He did that DC... what was it called? DC Legends with Lynn Wein, the DC history book. He was doing a lot of projects, whereas guys his age from his era weren't doing a lot of work.
He was running the school, and he was busy.
Right, and he put out a couple of OGNs, that Dong Zhuai book, that was a book of the month. I mean, he was prolific towards the end of his life in a way that a lot of the Golden Age guys aren't or haven't been or couldn't be.
He never stopped. I mean, like, right. He just had like a succession of – it's almost – he had a succession of graphic novels, and then he started doing mainstream work again.
So I feel like the good part was that he was well-recognized by people who may not have known about him before he left. And what happened this week was we actually got two books featuring work by him. We're going to talk about the second one after this one. The first one, Joe Kubert Presents, is a anthology that he curated. Did either one of you guys read this?
No, I missed it. Okay. But I haven't been to the shop, like I said.
Okay, so...
Yeah, my store sold out before I get it.
So this includes four stories, and in the middle of it is an essay about that Joe wrote explaining it. And basically he said he was looking around the comics industry and there wasn't really anything he was thrilled about reading, and there wasn't any work being done by these guys that he had, you know, from his era that he loved. And so he talked to Paul Levitz, who was the head of DC 4 years ago, so this tells you how long they've been working on this anthology, and he said, well, why don't you go make that book? So he has curating it. Joe Kubert Presents is obviously the name of it, and so there's stories by him, there's stories by a bunch of guys from his era that he brought back out of retirement to do these stories. So it's very much a love letter to the golden age of comic books in that it is a genre. It's not genre specifically superheroes. There's a superhero story. It kicks off with a Hawkman story, but then that's it. We go into different kind of genres after that, because when Joe Kubert was working in comics originally in the 40s, when he started through the 60s, up until the 60s, comic books were different genres. There was romance comics, Western comics, war comics, all kinds of different comics, which is, you know, what he apparently liked. So this is what he do here. We have a great Hawkman story. Hawkman was one of the characters he was most known for superhero-wise. He really defined the look of that character for many people. And in this tale, it's a short story of Hawkman and Hawkgirl when they first come to Earth from Thanagar on their mission, their scientific mission to observe and report back on this newly spacefaring planet. So it takes place a little bit in the past. But it is, you know, the best Hawkman story I've read in years. And it's simple. He doesn't try to explain the continuity, which is what they've been doing for 20 years with Hawkman. He just tells a Hawkman story of him coming to Earth and helping people. And it's gorgeous. It's fully written and drawn by Kubert. It looks, I mean, if you've ever seen Kubert draw Hawkman, he draws a great sort of lanky Hawkman character, not overly muscled, sort of very, very thin. And he just has this great look about him. And if you've seen Joe Kubert's art, you know what that looks like. And then there is a Angel and the Ape story, which is an old DC property of a 60s detective agency. It's a woman named Angel O'Day and her talking gorilla cartoonist sidekick. O'Day and Simeon is the name of the detective agency. And they're just a goofy, sort of wacky Silver Age story. It's a humor story. They get a client and they have to help the client. And it's full of jokes and things like that. Followed by a story called Spit, which is also written and drawn by Kubert, about a young boy named Spit who is an orphan. He's sort of wandering around the docks looking for food and for shelter, and he comes across these longshoremen, and he ends up getting a job on a ship. And it's just wonderfully drawn. And if you saw the Best of the Week in Panels featured this week on iFanboy, I featured a page. It's just penciled by Kubert. It's not inked. It's not colored, and it's not even drawn in a way that you expect it's going to get inked and colored. It's just a pencil. It's pencil drawing. He does all the shading. Everything is done with pencil, and it's very evocative. Very emotional. You really feel the sort of downtrodden nature of it with the really heavy pencil lines. It's just gorgeous work from Kubert. And the final story is from Sam Glanzman, and it's called I Remember USS Stevens. And Sam Glanzman served on the USS Stevens in World War II, and he just basically tells a story about one of the guys on the ship with him, and it's a sad story because it was the war and sad things happened. So it's just, it sort of runs the gamut from humor to war to superheroes to just a sort of a very human tale, in that this is what comics were for Joe Kubert, and this is what he wants to be reading, and this is what he's presenting to us. And it was just a glorious sort of overview of what comics can do, and done by people who are masters at their craft. I mean, Joe Kubert was better than everyone.
Taught them all how to do it.
If you look at the width and breadth of his work, just in this issue between the Hawkman art, then the Spit art, he could do any kind of drawing that you needed. And it looked great, and it was full of background and detail and emotion, and it's just really impressive what he was able to do at his age comparatively to what else is out there right now.
What I just love about it is I love that he was just like, yeah, there are no comics I want to read. I'm gonna go make a comic I want to read. Like that's the best motivation you could have, because nothing to do with sales or nothing to do with you know, like whatever crossover or whatever, you know, whatever's popular. It was a master of his craft going, yeah, I want to make comics like this. Mm-hmm. And it's just a shame he didn't get to see it printed, you know.
And getting guys who don't get to work anymore to do it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Was there supposed to be more than one of these?
There's six of them. It's one of six.
Okay.
Yeah, are they going to finish it?
Well, or? It says one of six in the cover. What I would imagine is if they didn't finish this, and again, if you go by the story in the book, they've been working on it for at least four years, that if they hadn't finished it, they would have just said one of three or as a special. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It wouldn't make sense.
You think?
It wouldn't make sense to me for them to say one of six and have it be the last three issues be guys who aren't Joe Kubert or picked by. You know what I mean? So I figure... If I'm running the show and they only got three issues where the Joe Kubert presents, and then it's one of three, so I feel like it's got to be done. That's just I'm assuming, but it's gorgeous, and you guys especially, once you get your hands on this, will really enjoy this.
I'm definitely going to pick it up. I didn't want to get it digitally because
likewise. Yeah, I already told my retailer to go pick it up, so get another copy for me.
It really is a joy to behold the Spit story, particularly. I mean, the Hawkman story looks great, but the Spit story, the way he does the, you know, it's a pencil comic. It's not a non-colored comic. It's he does the rain. He does the shading. It's everything. It's just beautiful. You can pour over this for hours. And then, did you guys read Ghosts?
I did.
Ghosts?
I did not.
Ghosts is it's an anthology from Vertigo. It's a bunch of horror stories for Halloween. And it sounds like they're going to be
ghost stories.
They're going to be doing this for other holidays, I guess, it said in the back. I think this is like the new DC Holiday special, but through Vertigo now.
As I was reading the beginning of the first story in this, I thought, oh boy, Ron wanted to have read this one. Yeah, I'm gonna read. When I was reading this, I thought I need to do a reading. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay, go for it.
The first story is called "The Night After I Took the Data Entry Job, I Was Visited by My Own Ghost." By making that decision, my ghost explained to me I had coldly and callously murdered him. In fact, I'd murdered an entire world where instead of taking data entry position, I'd decided to follow my own dreams. My dreams at that point consisted of playing synthesizer in an alt-80s band called Horsefinger. Anyway, my ghost explained stiffly he had no choice but to haunt himself for all eternity, and then he played a Ladytron riff at me. It goes on like that for a while with the ghosts. Where the ghost, he wants to impress chicks, and he goes, "Ian Curtis? Yeah, we jam. Very mellow guy."
Who wrote this?
I don't know the name. I mean, it's the name is Al Ewing, the artist by Rufus Dayglow. I don't know who it is, but I was reading it, and I'm like, wow, this is really for Ron.
shit, now I got to pick this up, too.
I loved this.
It's only one story. It's only like a
five. I loved this anthology. It had a great story from Cecil Castellucci and Amy Reeder about a couple growing apart, told through a lot of her art. She was an artist. And then there was the Joe Kubert story we'll talk about in a second. And then there was a Gilbert Hernandez story, a Jeff Johns, Jeff Lemire story, a Paul Pope story.
Paul Pope.
I mean, this was...
Cool. My favorite story in this was actually the Neil Clyde John McCrae story, which was about the demonic chili.
Yes. Yes.
The greatest chili ever, and I was like,
so good it melts your face, literally.
Yeah, like I was like, I kind of want to eat that chili.
No, Ron, you would love this. It had a great Gilbert Hernandez story. Had really great stuff from a lot of indie based creators.
I'll tell you something. What I did learn is that once you get Paul Pope in giant tabloid size form, have it be on a regular sort of page is kind of like, eh.
Yeah, it's a downer, isn't it?
It kind of is. I mean, I hate to be like that, but I was like, it's so small. Yeah. It's Jeff Johns and Jeff Lemire doing a story together.
I kind of want to pick this up.
Unusual for
superhero-y.
Yeah,
I had one complaint. Mm-hmm. It's only one. Is the on the cover it just says Nine Tales to Terrorize, including Neil Gaiman's Dead Boy Detectives, and I was like, oh, Neil Gaiman wrote a story. He didn't. They're just pointing out that he created it.
He created the characters. Yeah.
Well, they're Neil Gaiman's. So, yeah,
That's a little bit shitty.
And then there's a Kubert story, and there's before the story there's a page, a black page with text on it from Karen Berger where it says they commissioned him to do this story last June. He researched, wrote, penciled, lettered it within days, which is impressive. Then he put it on his board to finish, and then he unfortunately died before he could finish it. So it's all of his loose pencils before he got a chance to ink it, and it's really impressive.
It's super.
It's
long.
It's long, it's dense. It's amazing that he did this all in a few days. And it just shows you how talented he was literally at the very end.
Yeah.
Really, really impressive. And I also put some of that art on the Best Week panels feature also. Just great stuff. This was a really fun anthology as well.
We'll talk about surprise sleeper pick of the week. It, very close, but my pick of the week might nearly be Masters of the Universe, The Origin of Skeletor, number one.
I think without the Joe Kubert double feature, it's probably this book.
which is just a stark contrast between Joe Kubert Presents and Masters of the Universe Skeletor. Like, this is the world we're in. But I think it's best to kind of talk about this issue with a little bit of an anecdote. Going back to San Diego Comic-Con, what year was it? 07?
Oh, God, Keldor.
No, no, it's the first. It's older than that.
It's older than that. It's one of our
first ones. It was modern. It was modern. It was definitely 06 or 07. And when we went to San Diego Comic Con, and this is right when all the toy frenzy was kind of starting, with the toy exclusives and things like that. And I guess it was Mattel who was selling a exclusive Keldor action figure. And all throughout the con, the buzz was Keldor, Keldor. Who is Keldor? I gotta get a Keldor. And we're just like, who the fuck is Keldor?
Constantly.
and then it took us until like Saturday before we found out. I think it might have been Josh who went and investigated. I don't remember, but I just remember.
Well, that was in the days when you didn't completely separate yourself from the part you wanted to be in. Now we're not going over there.
Right? Yeah. Exactly. And I just remember coming back and like, so Keldor is Skeletor before he became Skeletor, and we're just like, what?
But really, all it was just the regular He-Man body with the Prince Adam face, but it was purple.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't, you know.
Yeah, $500.
Let's just say, did they trick these guys into doing this book? Were they like, hey, Frazier Irving, come right over here. And then they didn't tell him what it was until later? Like, he didn't know that he'd worked on a He-Man book until it hit the shelves?
No, they paid him Mattel money.
Yeah, they paid him that Keldor money.
Why is this okay, but the James Robinson thing wasn't?
The James Robinson thing was fine.
I know that, but he's off it.
Yeah. That was I don't know. Well, so Joshua Fialkov wrote it, and Fraser Irving did the art. And let's start with the cover. How great of a cover is that?
It's a great
with
cover.
The Skeletor's skeleton face, and then mist coming from the eyes, and in the mist is the faces of his minions. You got Trapjaw, you got Triclops, you got Evil-Lyn.
Where's Triclops?
right there in the middle.
To underneath the E in Universe.
No, that's Manny Faces.
No, that's Triclops.
That is Triclops? You're right.
Manny Faces is a good guy. Come on.
Come on.
Manny Faces' face has changed. This is just his eyes.
Who's the head under Triclops?
I don't know. It's some woman. And I don't know who the head above Evil-Lyn is.
That's Adam Warlock.
So this basically tells the origin of Skeletor and how a young Keldor is similar to Thor and Loki. Keldor is kind of a half-breed, gets passed over by his father to be the king of Eternia, and so then he submits himself to Hordak and gets, you know, kind of screwed up, gets the skeleton face, and then becomes Skeletor. This was just beautiful.
Yep.
It's great. I mean, putting the joke aside and the 80s nostalgia aside, I mean, it was like Hordak was much more horrifying than the action figure. I never understood Hordak.
Yeah, it's like Serpentor.
Yeah.
The folks at IDW are like, why are we doing this?
Yeah. But this is great. I thought it was really, really great.
I would love when the art would go black and white.
Yeah.
In the middle of it. It's just, Fraser Irving is ridiculously talented. And he does really well as stories that have a magical element to them.
Yeah.
Because his art really fits that painterly style, that sort of magic, the shade stories or the more crazy Batman stories, but this was great.
This was easily the best Skeletor story I've ever written.
Joshua Fialkov?
I killed him. I get all his jobs. Best that I've read. It's been a long week, guys.
Yeah. You have power now, though, right?
I do. I just got it back.
You're running a pedal generator to keep the mic going?
Yeah.
No, this was really fun. I think if you don't even really need to know about Masters of the Universe, it's just a tale about brothers.
I can guarantee that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. It's totally. That's totally it. You don't need to know anything about it. And the Fraser Irving art alone is just really, really interesting, really beautiful.
It's good script.
Absolutely.
So, but my real pick of the week was probably the CBLDF Liberty Annual 2012. If you're looking for a great anthology, again, every year the CBLDF Annual from Image, you know, serves up a great mix of stories, kind of celebrating First Amendment rights and things like that.
This is the most anthologies we've ever put in one episode.
Oh yeah, you're right. Wow, yeah.
There's more.
This year we got a little two pager of story and art from Hickman, which is rare.
Interesting.
So we got some Hickman art. We got a story by Andy Diggle and Ben Templesmith, Howard Chaykin and Sina Grace, Joe Keating and China Clugston. You got a preview of James Robinson and J Bone's new series that's coming out. really good story by James Asmus and Takeshi Miyazawa. You got a great little thing from Terry Moore. You got one I really enjoyed with Josh, you would like it, with a dog, Kieran Gillen and Nate Bellegarde and Jordy Belair. Jim McCann and Janet Lee from Dapper Men, they did a story. So really wide range of art and wide range of stories and things like that. But the kind of big draw is a never-before-published little mini Walking Dead story, which ties into the recent episode of The Walking Dead, a little story about the governor and his fish tanks full of heads. So if you're a Walking Dead fan, you're going to want to pick this up just to get that story and get the background on that. But yeah, another great anthology. I mean, just like, you know, a good anthology mixes it up, and this mixes it up just the right way. And it goes to a good cause.
I feel like Matt Murdock, moving on to the next book, we need another lawyer. We need another superhero lawyer, because every time there's a superhero legal issue, we have Jennifer, She-Hulk's last
Walters.
Name? Jennifer Walters.
Jennifer Walters, yeah.
She doesn't get used quite as much as Matt Murdock does. Whenever there's an issue,
yep.
He's there. I enjoyed Wolverine and the X-Men. It was really good.
Wolverine the X-Men was just the example of what makes this book so great. And it was, you know, like from the combination of, you know, I'm loving what Nick Bradshaw does and keeping the ongoing stories going, but while mixing it up. And, you know, like the thing is that like Jason Aaron is doing the right pace of seriousness and lightheartedness. Mm-hmm. And so after the last issue, which was, you know, broke our heart with Brew getting shot in the eye, this picks right back up right after AVX and kind of picking up the pieces, and we get our first glimpse. You know, there are two new mutants join the school, and Kitty's trying to hire a new teacher because Husk quit, and all the while Beast is trying to save Brew. He's trying to heal him and save him, and then you know Wolverine and Rachel Summers are trying to track down the Hellfire Club people who did this to Brew. So you got a lot of balls in the air, a lot of different things going on. Oh, also, and then Angel, with the help of Matt Murdock, gets back his company and now is, you know, back running it despite being a wackadoo. I mean, it's just so much fun to read. It's just so much fun to read.
It's also really dense.
That's what I was going to say.
Did you read this, Josh?
Yeah, I did. I didn't catch everything that was going on. That Ron just helped me out a lot, but I'm almost sort of caught up on
it.
So
did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I did, actually. I did. It's very odd and it's very different, so I was sort of down with it. If I had any complaints, it's that Matt Murdock glasses are stupid. But other than that, I like it. It feels like an alternate kind of thing. It was really almost broad comedy in places.
There's a lot of broad comedy in it.
It's sort of all over the place. But I was just like, well, there's a lot to this.
He has a lot of storylines going on. There's comedy mixed with intense drama and yep. action, and it's. I think it's a really well balanced book. It usually falls on the side of comedy, but for the most part, it's pretty well balanced on the whole.
This is the superhero drama that I fell in love with. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like you've got, you know, people in costumes and people with powers, but they're relatable and they've got feelings and ongoing storylines are going on. I mean, you've got the budding relationship between Toad and Husk. And you've got, you know, like the conflict between Wolverine and Rachel Summers coming out of AVX because Rachel was on Cyclops' side and, you know, and Wolverine was on the Avengers side, but now they're working together again. It's that balance of ongoing tension. It's not so much tension in an issue or tension in a story, but like references throughout the whole series. And this is how Jason Aaron's following the gospel according to Claremont and just doing it in a modern way, you know.
Poor Firestar.
Yeah, poor Firestar. We joke about, well, I mean, she seems to be a lot better. Last we saw her, she had cancer. So she seems to be, like, that's why I think it's always funny whenever they, cause, so what happened was that Kitty's trying to replace Husk. And so she and Deathlok are interviewing other potential teachers. And you get a lot of single panel, basically jokes.
It's very much like Justice League, the Giffen.
Yeah, very much.
It felt much like a Giffen membership drive issue where they would try to find a new Justice League member and they'd do that for the whole issue.
I can take a little bit of Deadpool.
Yeah.
I don't know why you'd want to have books full of him, but a little at a time.
Yep. Just the right amount, yeah. But
just enough Deadpool.
And so they ended up hiring Storm, which is a bit of a, oh, all right, Storm, fine. Whatever. But she's in her classic costume, and that's fine. And she asked for her old room back. But I want to be like, but Storm, it's a new building.
That's true.
Your room doesn't exist anymore. But
he's dead.
Yeah. But yeah, no, but it was funny and it was good. And I also love the ongoing make fun of Wolverine as a teacher.
Right.
Which happens in multiple books now. And so, you know, Spider-Man showed up and he's like, I just had to see for myself. Can I see where Wolverine grades papers?
It's funny though. I mean, that's what he would do.
Yeah.
That's what I would do if one of you started teaching. So Winter Soldier 12, the series is starting to wrap up. I think January is when Brubaker ends his run. So we've got two more issues or three more issues. And I get the feeling this is like we're in kitchen sink time now. Brubaker's going to throw everything into the end of the story, which is fine because I'm enjoying the hell out of it. But you've got Wolverine and Daredevil in this issue. Yeah. So I laugh when Daredevil showed up because it's kind of like, well, I did Daredevil 2 for a while, so let's throw him into the story.
I just love that as you read this, it looks and feels like a comic from the 70s.
Oh, absolutely.
That part's really
it's
fun.
Like Steranko.
Like, yeah. It's like a Gene Colan book. There's no.
You started reading this?
Yeah. Might as well.
It's beautiful, though, right?
It's absolutely beautiful, yeah.
I mean, I'm such a fan of this run purely because of what Geist did.
That, and it's just, it's back to the pulpy sort of.
No, it feels exactly like the first 25 Cap issues. It has that feeling.
That's what I like about it, because they got away from that because it kept getting mixed up. And this book, honestly, probably nobody cares about it anymore, so it's great.
Yeah, I think if you go back and read the entire run, you'll really enjoy this entire story they're telling. It feels exactly like the old Brubaker, to the point you wonder where he went.
What a cool idea that Bucky says, well, they'd make me back into the killer again.
Right.
Like, that's nuts. That's great. That's good old-fashioned that adventure sort of tension and all that, so... It's fun, yeah.
And then all the heroes have to keep him alive and keep him doing his job. It's good. It's really good. Mm-hmm. Works on lots of levels. Josh, Action Comics Annual number one.
Yes. I almost don't remember anything about the sort of main story. I guess it was fine. But I do know that I got to the Sook pages. And that's really the only thing that I wanted to talk about. And I go, and I tend to never remember what was on the cover and who's doing it until I'm halfway through it. And I was like, ooh, this art's really good. Mm-hmm. And I flipped the front. I was like, oh, Ryan Sook. That's why this is that Landis Sook story.
Landis, yeah.
I was just like... It's no word balloons messing up. It's just beautiful.
Yeah,
I mean, literally, you like he's one of those guys that every once in a while you'd be like, where the hell is this guy all the time? That sort of like Gene Ha or you know, I'm trying to think of another example, but just beautiful work, you know, done straight comic book storytelling. These pages with that just do pacing just exactly right and throw a bunch of panels on one page and. It was just a hell of a lot of fun to read. Actually, now that I'm looking at the front bit, it was a fine story.
That was Cully Hamner. He's good.
Cully Hamner and Sholly Fish, who's
Sholly Fish should just write action.
Yeah, he's actually very good. And I remember that from the other backup stories that he did. They were nice stuff. Well, who's this character? Is this character going to be like Metallo or something? Is that the deal?
I guess what's interesting is last week we talked about the point ones and then not knowing what they were.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we could have definitely talked about annuals in that sense too, because they're all over the place.
Yep. Yeah,
Justice League Dark this week was a continuation of the storyline. Batgirl was a past story. This was sort of a side story. Sort of, there's no rhyme or reason to what the annuals are anymore, and that was one of the problems this week with all the annuals they put out. You had some good stuff. There's some really good stuff.
I like Steel a lot.
Yes,
and I feel like remember like in 52, Steel was a really great character.
Mm-hmm.
And like he's great in this.
He was great in Morrison's JLA too.
Yeah, yeah, and that damn Shaq movie just messed everything up for him. And he looks almost exactly the same as Cyborg, which is a problem.
Well, he needs to get rid of the headpiece. He needs a helmet.
Yeah.
But no, he's a good character.
Good issue of Action Comics, I thought overall. Yes. Definitely worth reading.
Fatale number 9 came out. Am I the only one who's stuck with it?
Yes.
Yes, you
are. All right. Fatale number 9. I would advise you guys to go check it out purely because. This felt the most like a criminal issue than any issue of Fatale so far. And I don't know if it's because it took place like in the 70s in LA. And so, you know, so everybody had, it was Sean Phillips doing people with sideburns and stuff like that. But
that's what Sean Phillips should be doing.
Yeah, exactly.
And turtlenecks, turtleneck and sideburns.
Yeah, exactly. Totally. Exactly. But, this issue was great. This issue was really, really good. It's, you know, it takes place in 1978. And focuses around this kind of B movie actor who's teamed up with the Fatale woman.
Is it a new storyline, or is it still the old?
No, it's continuing. It's continuing the greater story, but it's the fourth chapter in the greater story. But yeah, it's a new storyline.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure at one point, like I know at one point they're at a party and Sean Phillips drew in like Burt Reynolds, which is kind of funny. But I'm pretty sure at one point they get into a cab and the cabbie is Robert Shaw.
Nice.
Because it's like
in Lexington.
Like, yeah, it's half his face, and I'm like, oh, yeah. But this was great, and I don't know if it was. I don't know what made it different than the first three chapters, or anything like that. But this issue was really solid. Really enjoyed it.
So there's a thing in comics, and we've seen it lots of times where people write their take on Superman.
Yep.
And I was reading Bedlam number 1, and I was like, oh, this is his take on the Joker, basically.
Oh my God, I'm not alone then.
No, he's just, it's a Joker story, but taken out of, it's like, I'm going to write the Joker, but out of, you know, Gotham, out of Batman, out of everything. So it was just a Joker story. And I don't know. It was fine.
Well, that said, I thought it's the first time in a while that I've really enjoyed Riley Rossmo's art.
It was a totally different style. I was kind of amazed.
Yeah, I thought art wise it was great, but yeah, I got about halfway through it and I was like, oh, this is his Joker story. But that said, I thought it was really good. You know, I thought it was really solid. I mean, this is like double sized.
It was fine. I did not like it. I was like, it's a Joker story. I don't know that I necessarily would have signed up for it. But basically, if you want a story about a supervillain who's a lot like the Joker and is insane and very, 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 very smart.
Is there a Batman?
There's no real hero. There's an allusion to a hero. There's that dude in the beginning with the armor, but we don't really find out a lot about him.
It's more about who the guy, Red Matter, is.
Matter Red. And there's a cool little kind of body swapping, kind of hop, like kind of difference. There's a swerve. There's a couple of different swerves where it's not a total Joker ripoff, but you could easily,
psychology.
Exactly. Yeah. But I mean, it's curious. I'm going to stick with it. I mean, when I looked at the cover, Fraser Irving did the cover and it was super dark. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I almost thought it was a horror book. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I really want this or not. But then I read through. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. I picked up on the Joker thing right away. But I was like, oh, but what Riley's doing, you know, full color, but like muted, still in his kind of, you know, kind of wild kind of style. But I feel like almost restrained a little more disciplined.
It was a lot more subdued, less lines, a little tighter, I guess.
Yeah.
If that sounds like, it sounds like the kind of thing that you want to read, it's totally worth the read, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Turtles.
Remember when the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles series came out from IDW, and I've been enjoying it, but I've always said, oh, well, the art is kind of the one thing that gets me. The art is, it's just, you know, it's not Eastman doing the art, it's somebody else, and it hasn't been that, you know, it hasn't been awful, but it hasn't been great or whatever. Well, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles annual, the 2012 annual, it's expensive. It's $8.99. And it's kind of like prestige format, you know, like a nice hard, glossy hard stock cover. And I'm not sure what the page count is, but it's definitely up to, it's probably closer to like 80 or 90 pages, but completely drawn by Kevin Eastman.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yep. Story by Eastman, script by Kevin Eastman and Tom Waltz, and art 100% by Kevin Eastman.
Does he still have it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like literally like it, like when I got this issue, I pulled out the hardcover that IDW recently put out collecting all the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles stuff and compared it. And because I thought this was an archive story. I was like, no way, this is new. That, I mean, like it looks spot on. Like the dude still.
Well, the cover he's been doing have been really good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is black and white. So if you never read the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles series by Eastman and Laird, pick this up because this will give you a strong feel of what it's like. And Eastman even dedicated it to Peter Laird, which is cool.
I always liked Peter Laird's art.
Yeah.
Like between the two, he just was a little more rounded and a little less sketchy, I suppose.
But yeah, but that was a wonder. I mean, it was like $8.99. I don't know if I really want this, but I opened it up. I was like, oh, fuck yeah, put me in.
So I have a couple of caveats for the next thing we're going to talk about. First is that we don't normally talk about trades in the show, though we have in the past, usually just Scott Pilgrim when they came out. But, you know, every once in a while we talk about them outside of the Book of the Month, but normally we don't. Second, we formed iFanboy to be positive and to celebrate comics, and we started doing the show, you know, after we formed the website to be positive and to celebrate comics. But every once in a while, we have to mention something that isn't just because you have to. But we try to stay away from that if we can. That said, Superman Earth 1 Volume 2 came out this week, and it was awful.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't like the first volume, but I thought it was more disappointing than anything else. But I didn't think it was awful.
This was awful.
This was awful.
Yeah, I read it purely out of like, oh, well, let me see, you know, what, you know, blah, blah. And I made it about halfway and I was like, and I remember, you know, the moment when you're reading something and then you look at the cover and then you open it up again and then you look at the back cover. Like, this is awful.
Did you finish it? Because I thought I got way worse in the second
half. I did finish it. Yeah.
It for someone who proclaims his love for Superman, and JMS has done that. This is J. Michael Straczynski, and who is the artist?
Shane Davis.
He has written columns about it. He has talked about it at conventions. He proclaims him to be a giant Superman fan. From all the Superman writing, this includes his run on the regular book, he doesn't seem to understand the character at all.
At all, yep.
And I understand that they want to do a more young, zeitgeisty Superman, so that he's a bit, like, you know, the cliches, he's a Twilight Superman, but he's... Under the sort of teenager elements, he doesn't seem like Superman. He is mopey. He doesn't inspire anything in anyone. He basically does somewhat evil stuff in this book. He doesn't feel at all like someone who understands what, at the very least, should inspire people about Superman. And it's just very weird. And he's got a hooker girlfriend, next door neighbor, who has the thong peeking out, and
oh, that was embarrassing.
And finds out he's a writer and goes crazy and just basically jumps him when she finds out he's a writer, and just felt like a writer fantasy character, and it just every tired cliche was thrown into this book, and it was a shock. And I thought the Shane Davis art, which was okay in the first issue, although very heavy on the photo reference, was really not very good in this volume. Superman looked different all the time. And
I thought the villain looked awful.
Yeah. Oh, the design for Parasite was terrible.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was just there was nothing good about this at all. And even down to the weird contoured cover.
Yeah.
It was just freaky. It was like Superman pops up outside of the cover, like it's like his rays. Oh, it's weird.
And for every one or two things that I found interesting, there was like 10 that I actively disliked. So
yeah,
you can rub your fingers over his abs though.
Oh,
yeah. It was really. And I'm a big proponent of these OGNs. I thought that the Batman one was great. I think the idea of they're doing them is great, but the execution of the Superman ones has not been good.
I'll tell you something. There's one page in here where you have to turn the book on its side.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that's okay with a hardcover.
Yeah, what was up with that? That was so weird.
One page.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was so weird. Fit. Yeah.
It's just not good.
Yeah,
not good.
Not good at all. Oh, God.
So those are the books of the week that we wanted to talk about and celebrate for the most part. You can go to ifanboy.com/comics. You can make your weekly pull list. You can pick your books, rate and review them, pick your pick of the week, and we also like to talk about the user picks of the week. If you make your pull list, you can choose your own pick of the week. And right now, Josh is going to run down the top five user picks of the week.
I am. Number five is Aquaman number 13, coming at 7.7%. That's pretty high for number five. Number four, Joe Kubert Presents number one at 8.1%. Number three, Justice League Dark Annual number one at 15.2%. Wow. Number two, Wolverine and the X-Men, number 19 at 16.9%. And number one, Nick Spencer's Bedlam, number one at 25.9%. If they can't get the Joker in the Batman book, they want him wherever.
Wow, that's really good for Bedlam. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's a neat little spread there.
Yeah, that's really good.
What a really high score for Justice League Dark Annual.
It was good.
Lemire wrote it, yeah.
We'll talk about it in the second review here.
All right, so on to the user reviews. So folks of you who go and do your picks of the week and do your comics polls, you can come back and review books. And our first review is from a Meerkat, who reviewed the Rocketeer Cargo of Doom number 3, a series that we've been loving with the dinosaurs. And Meerkat gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. And 4.8% of you made it your pick of the week this week.
It was number 6 on the list.
Number 6, so just missed the top 5. And Meerkat says, everything on this book is top-notch. Mark Waid knows how to write a fast-paced, action-packed comic. Chris Somney can bring the writing to life, and Jordi Belair compliments his art beautifully with her lively art doing the colors. The only problem I had with this issue was that we had to wait until next issue to resolve the dinosaur problem. Other than that, it's so much fun. And that's the thing. I mean, like, I think this is a miniseries, but like, this should just be an ongoing. It should just be old style comics. Like, it should end on a cliffhanger, and it just keeps on going forever. That's how I love the Rocketeer. It's great.
Forever.
Yeah, forever.
Never stop drawing 2 books a month, Chris Somney.
Never stop.
He won't. He'll kill himself.
I love that they introduced a ray gun into this.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I mean, you already have him fighting a giant boatload of dinosaurs, and so might as well introduce a ray gun because it's awesome. And this was great. This was another great issue. I mean, this has been a fantastic miniseries.
Absolutely. I'm trying to read this next username.
CPT Algonquin 17.
Oh, you did that really well.
Wow. Well, Connor has the Dakota ring. So
I guess so. Of Justice League Dark Annual number 1 gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. And as we said, the pick of the week percentage is 15.2%. And he says, wow. While most annuals are standalones, Lemire takes the opportunity to use the expanded format to conclude his War for the Books of Magic arc. And what a wild ride it is. Lemire is able to completely bring readers up to speed without ever slowing the issues down. The dialogue and exposition fluidly moves that should have any reader enthralled in this final battle. The book handles the expansion of the JLD very well, and all the characters fit naturally into the pages. As cliche as it sounds, Lemire's writing will have you on the edge of your seat, as will our anti-heroes, as our anti-heroes reach the climax of the story.
I don't believe it's a conclusion. It continues.
No.
There's a cliffhanger. Yeah.
They haven't found Tim Hunter.
Yeah,
I know that.
It's not. There's probably a couple more issues to go. It's near the end of the story, but it's not the conclusion. It doesn't wrap up.
Yeah. But I think that Mikkel Janine is an excellent artist. Mm-hmm. I really like his work on this. I'm done with my review.
Okay. I loved it. I thought Frankenstein and the character from Amethyst was great. I love this wacky grouping of characters, and I know Josh hates it, but I
want to be like, I don't think it's bad. I just don't like it.
I know. I know you do. I know. And I, that's
you know.
Fine.
I don't have a problem. I can't be like, you did this wrong. I just...
I understand.
Fucking trench coat guy.
He's great.
Okay, so those are the user reviews. You can go to ifanboy.com/comics, do your pull list, do your ratings, and come back and write reviews and get on the show. On to the email. We love to hear from you. And our first email is from Joseph P. from Midland, Texas, and says, I get that this is a stupid problem to have, but I think I have too much money to spend on comics. Uh-oh, Connor, this might be a rich person.
Uh-oh.
Rich people. Joseph continues by saying, I'm buying almost everything right now because I have the disposable income to do it. It's no issue for me to drop $200 a week on single issues and trades.
You better have a point pretty soon, Joseph. But, because me and Connor is strapping up the car.
But now my stack...
Midland, Texas, he'll shoot us. It's not.
My stack is like 40 issues deep, and I feel like I'm slacking by not reading every book I buy before next Wednesday. Do I say screw it and just read when I get the time? Or do I stop buying so many books and just pick the ones I really enjoy? How do I stop the comic completist in me from going hog wild every time I walk into my shop? Any advice on my champagne problem would be appreciated. Listen, Joseph, I love comics as much as the next person. There's got to be better things to spend your money on.
Yeah. I spend that much in a month. I'm already buying 20 to 30 books a week. I can't even imagine what – it sounds almost like a compulsion rather than anything else.
I mean, if he needs to buy them, you don't – I mean, the thing is you don't need to read them all in the week. You know what I mean? Like you can have a pile of books that you get through. In fact, I have the same. I have a pile of issues and I have a pile of hardcovers that when I've got time on a Sunday, I grab it and I go outside, I get a beer and I read a comic and it's just nice. You know, like you can do that. You don't need to, like, it's not a race to finish them in a week.
However, if every week you keep adding to that list, like for me, that's the thing that stresses me out. Like having this big stack of unread stuff that you're sort of just not getting to. And I think, you know, cut back, just buy the stuff that you do really enjoy. And then you'll find yourself with extra time. And then, you know, you go back and get anything you missed if, you know, there's something you want to read. That's always a possibility, you know, but getting more stuff just because you feel like you need to or because you can doesn't necessarily.
The complete element of it.
Yeah, and that's probably not healthy.
You don't need to buy everything that comes out.
No, no, you definitely don't.
You can't be enjoying all of it.
No, that's the thing. Like, you can't unless – because eventually, like, I get tired of some kinds of things, you know, and I assume other people do eventually.
But, hey, you know, that's not a bad problem to have.
You've got that much cash, though. Do you have the free time also? And if so, how do you do that?
I'm serious. I mean there are strip clubs. There's cocaine. There's heroin. There's so many other things. No,
gambling.
No, yeah, save that money for travel or I don't know. Anyway, but I'm not saying buy less comics, but I mean the thing is if you're buying comics and a lot of them are going unread, then you might want to reconsider how many you buy.
Are you buying them to buy them or buying them to read them?
Exactly, and then further buying them to enjoy them. That's the other question too. So
I would also like to talk to you about an investment opportunity.
Yes,
yes. Please email us. all right, next email.
Samira wrote and says, I have a son named Mark. He loves all things superheroes, especially Superman. Although he can't read on his own, I wanted to start reading comic books for him. I figured I'd want to start with Superman, Batman, or Justice League. Can you tell me where it would be good to start so he knows the story of Superman and other characters? Is it age-appropriate for a 5-year-old?
Oh, crap. There are those great Superman and Batman children's books. Do you remember those, Connor, that David showed us a couple years ago?
Yes.
Oh, I'm going to look to find them. There's a great series of books about, like, basically about Batman and Superman that are totally age appropriate for 5-year-olds. And I would go grab it because I got it for my niece, but they're moving and it's in a box.
I also think that, you know, the current output, the Superman Family Adventures that Franco and Balthazar do are 5-year-old appropriate. I think, you know, you go back and get those Tiny Titans collections are 5-year-old appropriate.
Those are exactly what you want, I think.
There's a lot of DC all ages stuff that you could read to a 5-year-old and it'll be fine. But especially that stuff. But.
Yeah, oh, man, I wish I could remember the author of this. It was just, I mean, of course, I search Amazon for Batman. And
that was a mistake.
Yeah, Josh. Arkham Asylum. You're going to want to start with Arkham Asylum. And then
Josh, you have a 5-year-old.
I don't. I have a 2.5-year-old.
He's not different. 5? He's very big.
Well, I thought he was 17.
He's driving. I mean, I see why that would throw you off.
There is stuff. There's not a ton of stuff. But
here's the thing with me is any kid who's older...
I found it. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Josh. It is a book called Batman, The Story of the Dark Knight, and it's by Ralph Cosentino, Cosentino. And he did a Batman book, a Superman book, and a Wonder Woman book. Perfect. Start there.
Well, there you go.
There you go. It's Batman, The Story of the Dark Knight by Ralph Cosentino, Superman, The Story of the Man of Steel, and Wonder Woman, The Story of the Amazon Princess. They're perfect.
When I was five, I was reading G.I. Joe.
Yeah, but you were smoking.
Oh, I was reading. I was absolutely reading the Spider-Man comic I got when we went to France, which was Spider-Man versus Rocket Racer, and all of the word balloons are French.
Comics back then were written. I mean, you could also just get old comics because they were written for all ages. But I was definitely reading Larry Hama's Vietnam-tinged G.I. Joe in kindergarten.
Yeah.
So there you go. If you have any emails, email the contact@ifanboy.com with any problems with having too much money, having young children, anything. We'll take it all.
We will take your excess money.
Yes.
On to the voicemails, a hotly anticipated return call.
Hi, this is Jim from Niagara Falls calling you back. And the reason for my call is because I heard that you are in need of some barrel facts. So, yes, as the Niagara Falls person, I am an expert. And the only key things that you need to know are, one, and take out a pen and paper, Josh. You need to write this down. One, the barrel most likely originated from the Balkan area. Two, it was used to ship things like wine and beer. And three, it was made famous in the 3rd century by the Roman soldiers. There is your barrel facts. But yes, guys, I got a little embarrassed and got scared and I hung up. I'm sorry. But anyways, my original question had nothing to do with barrels. And I was wondering, because I know, Ron, you like to think and think a lot. And so I was wondering what you thought about who was the greatest, who did the greatest run on the Daredevil series, Wade, Brubaker, or Miller, or whoever. Even you can even throw in Kevin Smith if you want. But that's my extremely long message. No, I did not die in the trip over the barrel, and I think it's awesome that I made your podcast with my complete screw-up. All right, love the podcast. Hopefully this will make the show, too.
Well, it's good you're not dead. I mean, that's just right off. And thank you for those facts about barrels.
Ron, I gotta admit, that was pretty good.
Yeah, no, he came back with it. That's good. Ron, I guess it's your question, so
who cares what we think?
You can even do Kevin Smith if you want.
I don't really have an answer, though.
The answer is Frank Miller.
Yeah. It all comes from Frank Miller.
Because everybody that everything did after that was based on what Frank Miller did.
Frank Miller did the most important Batman and Daredevil stories.
Yeah.
That's
and
true.
It looked really good,
too. There ain't no arguing with that.
Yeah.
The answer is Frank Miller. Thank you.
The answer is always Frank Miller. Yeah, I agree. I totally agree.
unless the question is, hey, who's got really good modern political ideas? and then the answer is not Frank Miller.
The question is, who's really sort of even-keeled and calm about everything?
That's not Frank Miller.
The great thing about Frank Miller is that it's very definitive, either yes or no.
There's no gray area with him.
He's following the Steve Ditko mold.
Yeah.
But the question, for example, could be, who's made a very smooth transition from comics into the film industry?
And then back again.
It's not Frank Miller.
No. All right.
Who's never released a really controversial book in the last year?
All right. On to our next questions with some concerns about an initiative.
Hi, Ron, Josh, and Connor. This is Scott in Texas. And I was calling because of the fact that recently one of my friends who hasn't read comics in like 10 years but still has a general interest said, hey, I heard about this Marvel Now thing. Should I be excited about it? And I thought about it for a little bit, and I talked to him a little about what's going on. And I realized I don't even really know what's going on. Like, how did Nick Fury become the Samuel L. Jackson Nick Fury, but in the 616? And also, on top of that, if people aren't diehard comic fans like we are, you and I, and they're not really that interested in creators and creative teams, then what do they care about Marvel Now? Marvel Now seems to just be shuffling teams on different books. And so for you and me, that's really exciting because of the fact that we get to see Bendis try to do X-Men, and we get to see Hickman take on the Avengers, and we get to see Remender finally get his fair shake, and that's all cool. But Joe Schmo comic fan, what do they care about that? Anyway, maybe I'm missing something. I hope y'all explain this on the email or voicemail or whatever line section of the show. Goodbye.
He was doing really well and just kind of faded out at the end there. He just didn't know what he was saying. No. It's actually a really good question. I'm sure we all have lots of thoughts on it. So Ron, why don't you start talking? Because we couldn't stop you if we tried.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, basically, he saw through the illusion. It's pay no attention. It's pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Marvel now is nothing more than a marketing campaign around relaunching new number one books with different creative teams. That's all it is.
It's a way to get the current audience to buy more books.
And the really interesting thing is, and this kind of broke, you know, this past week in terms of, you know, the blogosphere and commentary and stuff like that, is that it's not nearly having the same impact as DC's New 52 as a great jumping on point and restarting the continuity and stuff like that. And the only reason why Marvel now is even showing any sales success is because of the inane variant schemes that they have going on, where if retailers order 750 of one copy of one book, they get one variant cover that they can then sell for $400 and that sort of thing. It's Marvel playing its sales and marketing game to the max now. It's like it's almost
Yes, but. The other side would be, and this is coming from me, and people who know the show will know that, you know, that's the thing. Marvel's been really stayed for a long time. The same people have been on the same books for a really long time. Bendis has been on the Avengers since the Carter administration. Like, if you want to see somebody, you know, it's been exciting to read what Hickman's been doing in his books. And so to have him do a different thing with different characters, and I know it's just all superhero stories anyway, but that's kind of interesting. I think that Rick Remender on a story on a thing like Captain America, it's going to feel like a different book than Captain America has in a really long time. And even if you don't know who those people are, it doesn't really matter because it still has the possibility of being really good. I don't know if it's going to be really good. None of us do. But if, you know, all you need to do at the end of the day is read some of them and then tell your friend who doesn't care who the creators are or anything like that, oh, this is really fun. Why don't you read it? It doesn't matter if he knows who's writing it or not.
Yeah, and in their defense, they are, at least from what I can tell and from the conversations we had at New York Comic Con and stuff like that, is that they are attempting, while they are still maintaining continuity, these are attempts to make jumping on points. And I think Uncanny Avengers number one was a great example of that. You can grab that book not knowing anything about what came before and get it.
And another thing that's happening is that for these guys, these creators, there's not so many of them. Marvel's a pretty small shop at this point. You know, this is a shot in the arm for them. They get to do something different for a little while because they've been on this event train that's been going from one thing to the other for such a long time. That I think that people are coming into it excited, you know, with the sort of stories they get to tell with these sort of different characters as they shuffle things around. So that can only be a good thing, I think.
And what I do find interesting is that, you know, you've got your mainstays, you've got your Avengers and you've got your X-Men and you've got your Captain Americas and stuff like that they're doing. But they are taking risks too. They are putting stuff out there that is new and is different. And whether they last, whether an ongoing series or a Morbius the Living Vampire survives or not, that's the same question we said when iVampire launched with the New 52. So I'll give them that credit. That, you know, things like Avengers Arena and things like, you know, Morbius and things like I don't even know,
there are
risky things in there. So I'm excited for that. But to your point, to the point he made about you know, the Nick Fury being in the Marvel Universe, stuff like that, they've done that already. Nobody just cared. Nobody paid attention.
Yeah, it's his illegitimate son that he has had all this time, who is just looks just like Samuel L. Jackson.
Shocking.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So you're picking up on it, and whether or not it's a success or not, I mean, the thing is, there'll always be an Avengers comic book. There'll always be a Fantastic Four comic book, regardless of who the creative team is or what the number is on it. So
I don't know, man. It's kind of, it doesn't feel like they really are relaunching a lot of it, which I think is, I know, which is fine.
Yeah,
like that's fine. It's you know, I do not believe you need to start everything over to get new readers. You have to make it really good. That's all that's ever mattered.
Agreed.
So that's that. They have their shot to do that, and if that happens, good. You know.
So if you have any questions, you can call us at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. If you can add to the barrel knowledge that Jim from Niagara Falls provided, please do. I think we're going to spin off the Pick of the Week in Barrels
podcast. Barrel Show?
Yeah. Barrel Show, yeah. All about barrels.
This week, oak.
Yeah, all about barrels.
I like an oak barrel, a little smoky flavor.
I'm sure we can get Neesman on to tell us about the barrels they make bourbon in.
Oh, I'm sure.
I'm sure he could do that. So yeah, maybe we'll do that on a future show.
Running to a phone right now.
Yeah, but
someone mentioned bourbon.
Call 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. If you like podcasts that aren't about barrels, we've got other podcasts you can listen to. iFanboy Don't Miss, where we talk to creators about a comic book coming out this week, coming out on the various weeks. Last week, we talked to Josh Fialkov about Skeletor. So if you want to hear more about that, you can go listen to that. And that will tide you over because we took a week off because with the hurricane and all that stuff, it's been crazy. So, Don't Miss is available on iTunes. Go subscribe to it and get it on iFanboy.com, as well as
the Make Comics podcast, which also suffered a rain delay this week, we'll call it, understating it, where we talk about an aspect of of making comics in some way. The last one that came out was about dialogue. I really liked that show. I thought that was a really good one. It was sort of a bunch of different ways that, that writers can think about dialogue. And we've got more coming up. We'll start up again next week. This week was obviously an off week for a lot of people.
Similarly, Halloween in many places was canceled.
We still haven't had ours yet.
So you have till November 11th to send in your Halloween costume picks for the roundup. I may or may not extend that deadline depending on how many entries we get.
I love how it's like by the grace of Connor. It's like, I may or may not. I don't know.
I haven't decided yet, but we've gotten a good amount. But clearly, many of you have not been able to go on Halloween, including, you know, New York, which is pretty, you know, big part of our audience. So
Jersey rescheduled it, right?
Yeah. If you have gone on Halloween to a party or trick or treating, whatever, please take a photo, send your costume into my email, Connor@ifanboy.com. Costume in the subject line. You have till November 11th to do that. Unless there's further notice, but you can check on ifanboy.com for more news.
And go to ifanboy.com. That's where you can find all the great stuff, like all the podcasts and all of our wonderful articles that come out during the week. Some great conversation on the site this week. Some really interesting stuff between Disney buying Lucasfilm and what's the best ongoing comic and all that great stuff. There's so really interesting conversations. The definitive guide to Marvel Now, which I know everybody loved. So you go check that all out at ifanboy.com. And you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/ifanboy, and over on Facebook at facebook.com/ifanboy, so you make sure you never miss anything. And you might have noticed that we've been rolling out the videos from New York Comic Con. We had some great interviews this past week with Rick Remender and Jamal Igel and Scott Snyder. And so you can go to youtube.com/ifanboy, subscribe there, watch them there, or get them every day or whenever days that they come out on ifanboy.com.
You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. Or call us 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697 with any questions. They don't have to be about barrels, but they can be comments.
They should be.
Discussion topics. As you can see, he came in with a different kind of question, different kind of email, voicemail.
He did. It was good.
He got on the show.
It was longer, but it was good.
That's how you do it. You be smart or funny or interesting. Don't be boring or long. Tell us where you're from. That's all.
You dig us. You can write a review in iTunes. Spread the love. Go to the satellite shows. I was about to say the lesser shows, but I didn't like how that felt. Spread it around a little bit or let keep us going towards a giant number for this show. That's also fine.
Are you calling your Make Comics podcast a lesser show?
I didn't. I almost did. Uh-huh. But it is lesser in terms of, you know, it's shorter.
Content?
It has
quality?
Less content. Quality, I'd say that
interest?
When you take you two out of it, then the quality does take a jump. Definitely.
Well, obviously.
Anyway, clearly the lack of electricity
has bothered Josh to the point where.
Well, I think I put the generator too close.
Yeah. And do you call it Jenny? The Jenny?
I do, but only when I'm trying to be when I try to act like George W. Bush did when he would clear brush,
nice.
Just like sort of faux rustic.
I gotta admit, I got back to New York today and I walked to the deli to go get my lunch. And I'm on the North Shore of Long Island. It didn't get as hard hit as some of the other places in Jersey and stuff like that. And but still more than half the town is out of power. And someone had their generator on their driveway running, chained to a truck with locks and everything. To keep from being stolen. And I was like, wow. Like, that was a wake-up call.
It's rough out there.
That's the difference between where I live and where you live. Like, everybody just has it in the driveway. And no one worries about it. I mean,
okay, I have some very distressing news to report now. This is breaking news.
Yeah.
Okay.
We only got one more review since last time we talked on iTunes.
Oh, come on, people.
We're at 851. We were at 850 last time.
What?
How are we going to get to 1,000? How are we going to get to 1,000?
Not like this.
This is no good.
Wow.
Come on, people.
I don't care anymore. I know there are more than 851 of you listening to this, which means that there are thousands of slack asses.
Yeah.
Maybe you lost power. I don't. You can do it for your phone. I mean, come on.
Go write reviews on iTunes. Damn it. Get it. Help us get to 1,000. All right. So until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
Whatever.
Just kissing my face. The city keeps on going. We just keep on rolling. The city keeps on going. We just keep on rolling again, again.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.